Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome back to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. I am Cliff.
Hello, I am Brett. That is me.
Yes, Howdy. It is you. No daft names this week. Not like that.
Nope. It's very serious this week.
Straight
isn't
up
it?
And down. It is serious. I mean, I'm sure not
serious
everything.
Serious shit, man.
We say it'll be serious, but the main chunk of it will be serious. That's yes. For sure, because it is, as I've just said to you before we started, a harrowing mm-hmm. watch. Very,
it certainly is.
Very, yeah.
It's almost been as harrowing as the week of news we've just had.
Well, I was going to say, not much has happened this week, has it?
Aye. Nothing's happened at all, has it?
Okay,
crazy, no. Really. Isn't it funny how it comes in waves? Like, you don't hear nothing for ages, nothing happens, and then all of a sudden, it all happens in the same week. Mm-hmm. All the craziness. There's been loads of stuff, hasn't it?
I thought you were talking about Lee Clark taking over a Sudanese club.
No, I'm not talking about that at all. I'm definitely not talking about that. But it's been this real thing this week, hasn't it? And then Piers Morgan storming off and stuff.
I mean,
which is very funny.
I mean, I don't watch either, obviously, but I've seen the clip. He's just a fucking big baby, isn't he? Or an idiot. He's attention-seeking big baby, and he will have a job lined up on Andrew Neil's GMB News, I am sure, whatever it's called.
GB
News.
I don't know if you know, Cliff, or if we've talked about this before. What's your opinion of the screaming footballers?
About the same as Sean Dyche.
It's an absolute disgrace, isn't it? I was watching a game last week. I think it was Chelsea and Giroud, whatever you want to call him. He went up for a header and he slid and very slightly brushed the post with his hip. And the screams coming from it was disgusting. I switched it off.
They're always funny, aren't they? Like this, like even before the screams, like when you see footballers trying to have a fight with each other, you're like, have you ever seen a fight before, lads? Like, this isn't how it goes.
that's it, isn't it? That's just awful.
But Sean Dyche's interview, I thought was really funny about it.
I mean, it was diving and stuff like that I hated about football, and now it's the screaming. It's just another thing to hate about, I think, isn't it? Cliff, I received something in the post today.
Oh, did you?
It's a lovely thing. Yes, I did. A lovely thing picture that I'm going to have next to me bed. So was that from you, was it?
That was from me, yes. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's a wonderful thing, that. So, yes, it's very,
it looked
very good,
good when I ordered it. But I didn't realise it was coming from Canada because I thought it would get there for your birthday. But it didn't get there. It didn't take too long, to be honest. It said it was going to get there between the 10th and the 16th. So that's nice.
The good old Canadians. The good old Canadians.
Yeah, you know what they say. But,
one more thing about, what did they say?
Just like good at post.
there is one person in football that I do admire though, and I'll explain why. Arteta, the Arsenal manager.
Yeah.
Not a grey hair in sight. No way.
Are you likening yourself to Arteta now?
Well, certainly not the amount of grey hair I've got. Definitely not. But it's almost like he's a mute, isn't it?
How old is he?
I mean, he's got no grey hair whatsoever.
He looks the same as he did when he was playing. Doesn't look very different, does he?
But not a grey
what do you think about... here's
got,
one
got
thing.
Good jeans.
Fulham are doing well, aren't they? So they're probably going to stay up at the expense of Newcastle. But and Brighton,
yeah.
who...
Oh, Brighton, I think. Yeah,
I think, yeah, he had like three cuts on the other day when they played Liverpool.
Three cuts?
He did.
Yeah, that's too many.
It's too
What's
too many,
the limit
yeah?
of the cuts? It probably is. Actually, the Sullivan manager Lee Johnson last night was getting interviewed on Sky and he had about three cuts.
What's going on? He probably saw Parker. He probably was like, Parker, oh, they're doing well, aren't they? People like him. I'll try that tactic. he's out of shape, Lee Johnson, isn't he? Out of shape.
I think a little bit, yeah. I think he's discovered Greg since he's moved up here.
I mean, he would have been partial to the pasties in the Southwest.
Probably, yeah. I think what it is, it's the interview quote. So if you've ever been interviewed on any channel, they have to give you the interview quote.
Oh,
yeah, put it over you. Yeah, I think that's the reason. You always have to have the interview quote.
You would have thought that wouldn't comply with COVID regulations, but...
It wouldn't, would you? But, I mean, obviously, you know, they've gone past that, haven't they?
But talking to Sunderland, it's actually going well, isn't it?
Looking good. It's a bit worrying that it's looking good.
In the Papa John's final, I am 100% ordering Papa John's on Sunday night if we win that. No doubt about it.
Well, this is the thing on Sunday. I've got this. You know, when you go to Spain, you go to them little shops and stuff, and they've got the bottles of red and white wine and mm-hmm. things, and they've got the club crest on the front.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I bought one of them on me and the wife's honeymoon. So it's about 15, 16 years old, this thing, and I've kept it. And I've said, I'll open it if we win something. So if we win on Sunday, I've got to open this 16-year-old bottle of wine, which is going to be like vinegar in it.
It's not going to be nice wine in the first place, is it? Like, it's not going to got better in 16 years.
No. Well, it cost 2 pesetas, so I've got, you know, high hopes for it. Potatoes. Yeah, I'm trading potatoes.
Did they even? Why not the fuck? The first time I went
before the Euro, man.
Yeah, I've only used the potatoes once.
Have you? I'm sure it was potatoes at the time. Anyway, okay. Cliff, have you ever been to a Mormon wedding?
No.
I have. It was a very joyous and loving occasion. Just wanted to tell you.
Okay.
And the Ben's got our little thing where we'll like look up people's funny names, and he was pissing himself laughing a couple of days ago looking up funny names.
Okay.
He found the best one. He found was a teacher called Mr. Perv.
Mr.
Perv. That is a good one. Mr. Perv.
Would you change your name? Even if you weren't a teacher, you might not go by that name.
I think you would definitely change your name, wouldn't you? If you were Mr. Perv. I mean, because kids always say, oh, you know, he's a perv, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, his name's going to, it's going to cement the fact that he's a perv, even if he isn't. So, yeah, definitely. And the other thing I saw this week, it was a... Or last week, I think it was. It was International Women's Day, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Last week. Yeah. And Burger King put this thing out on Twitter. It was trying to say that, you know, there's not enough women sort of working in their kitchens and things like that. And the big slogan at the top of it was, women deserve to be in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Something like that, wasn't it? Women belong in the kitchen.
Women belong in the kitchen. Jesus, I think Christ. It was that.
That's it. Yeah, it's like Chris Morris has took over Burger King sort of promo.
But then they had another tweet underneath being like, "What we're really trying to say is like, mate, nobody's reading the second tweet once you've done that."
Yeah, who thought that up? Jesus Christ!
Yeah, that was bad, wasn't it?
It was pretty bad.
Yeah, this is a little segment for. Well, there's a couple of things that our mate Davey Hall's going to like this week. But the first one is that MasterChef's back on the telly. You won't be that interested, but I watched the first episode the other day, There's more now, but I've only seen the first one so far. And there was a really good old Scottish bloke on it, like in his 60s, I would say.
Yeah.
And he was just saying, oh, you know, he was from Arbroath, actually. So he didn't like this as well.
You don't like that.
He said, oh, you know, I live on the coast and it's all about seafood for me. It's nature's bounty. There's nothing better. Just as simple as you can get it. You don't need to do much to that.
Nature's
just,
bounty.
I think I might have added that in, but he said something like that. he said, you don't need to do much to it. Don't spoil it. It's as simple as possible. So anyway, his first round, he made some lobster with chips. And they were like, yep, nothing that fancy, but it's really tasty. Thanks very much. You're through to the next round. Next round after that, he made some crab. Or basically, he put some crab meat on a plate with some tomatoes around it and some avocados. And they were like, yeah, I mean, the crabs, it's all nice, but you haven't really cooked anything, have you? You just put crab on a plate with tomatoes. And you know what? It tastes nice. You've got one more chance. You're going to have to, like, go a bit, do something a bit more in depth than this. And he was like, oh, a bit annoyed by John Turow's comment there. I don't see the problem. But anyway, next time I'll come out. I'll do it better. Next time he comes out, he does the same, but with just a but he just puts more different cold fish on the plate. Doesn't cook it. Anything again? They're like, mate, this is the same as last time, but you've changed crab or like prawns or something. It's like, yeah, but it's lovely.
I like people who do shit like that.
You haven't cooked anything.
I love people who do that. Stuff like that. Chances.
Yeah.
Is he a chancer?
He seemed like a lovely bloke. And I think he was just hoping to, like, just because he likes Scottish seafood, he was hoping that would be enough to get him through. That was good. I'll keep watching it. I'm sure like there'll be loads more episodes by now, but that was good. And then from such highs, we went to really miserable lows because we watched a documentary. I've watched the first two episodes of a documentary series from 1980 that you recommended. The six episodes?
I'm not too sure actually how many episodes there were, because I just sort of stumbled upon this on YouTube and I thought, I'll give it a watch. And there's only four on YouTube, so I've watched all them. But we concentrated on the first two, didn't we? Or we watched the first.
Well, you wanted to watch the second one, but I started at the beginning. Do you want to tell everyone what it is? Tell the boys and girls.
So what it is, it's a 1980 fly in the wall documentary, this one by a guy called Rex Bloomstein.
Great name.
And it was the first time that it is a good name, that cameras were allowed in prison. It was the first time that had sort of ever happened, and it won sort of two BAFTAs and stuff like that. And what it did was it basically revealed like the tensions in the prison between the inmates and the guards, and also the squalor that the prisoners were sort of living in as well, and the conditions. Yeah, so that's what it's about. But I mean, on the first episodes,
which
there's a great, really good bit at the start. It's Strange Ways.
Yeah,
I said
we haven't said the name of it. It's called Strange Ways. If you'd said it's called Strange Ways, I wouldn't have said which prison.
I did say Strange Ways,
didn't man? Anyway,
you're losing your mind. You losing your mind. But yeah, so it's Strange Ways. Even though I did say that. But there you go. But yeah, I mean, the first episode kind of sums it up. I mean, they're talking to this prisoner, and he says, he's talking about the conditions and things and what will happen in the future. And he says, this place will go up, and when it does, the roof will come off.
Yeah.
And obviously, 10 years down the line, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
The roof did come off.
So we would have been 9 when that happened. It was very famous. 1990. Strange Ways prison. Strange Ways in Manchester, for anybody who doesn't know, and it's a Victorian prison, opened in 1868, I think. There's this central tower kind of thing, and then five or six wings that come off the side, yeah. like around it.
Like a spider's web, or a snowflake. Something like that, isn't it? It's a strange design.
Yeah, and it, I mean, it's massively intimidating. Like you say, it's a Victorian.
And I think the idea of that is building, yeah. I think the idea of that is that it's supposed, everything's supposed to be controlled from that middle, isn't it? So they can sort of see everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the place is so dark, it's impossible. It's impossible to see all that stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's mental. So in the 1990, I remember it. I remember this being on the news all the time. It was such a big deal. A prison riot. It started on April the 1st, my birthday.
You're cocking up all my questions for later, you.
Oh, okay, sorry. it lasted for 25 days, which was the longest time that I'd been a prison riot. And during that time, famously, the prisoners were on the roof sending messages to the media or whatever, like writing things on sheets and stuff like that about why they were doing it, what they wanted to achieve and all of this kind of stuff. And really, this documentary we've watched is set 10 years earlier, 1980, and everything that they say in that riot is the same in 1980. So 10 years, obviously, absolutely nothing had changed. So this place wasn't progressive. However long it had been like that before, and there was obviously no sign of any progression in those 10 years.
I mean, that's the thing. Obviously, nothing had changed. And like you've brought up there, God knows how long it had been like that. You know what I mean? Feasibly, it could have been worse. But the thing I'm thinking about when I'm watching it, I mean, you know, it's any mistake that, you know, you could make, you could find yourself in that prison. I mean, at the time, if you're recording stuff off the television, you could have gotten sent to Strange Trace, couldn't you? I mean, could have easily happened. I mean, if we had made different choices in our lives or whatever, we could have been there, couldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's now still open. It's now HMP Manchester. It had to be refurbished after the riots. So it's still there, still accepting people. So like you said, it was opened with a capacity meant to hold about 1,000 people, but it's almost double that by the time the riots come about, and it's on its way there when this documentary's on 10 years earlier. So I remember that, and also, I don't know whether this is an imagined memory, but I went with me Nana on a coach trip to Granada Studios to see where they filmed Coronation Street and that when I was about this age, and we definitely went past the prison. And in my mind, the riot was going on when we went past. I would have been about 9 or 10, but maybe I've just like mixing those things together. I don't know, but I feel like it.
Yes.
I know we went past it because I remember
a blurring of memories.
I remember it being me Nana being like, "Oh, that's a strange way."
I remember it being on the news because it was on the news, you know, for 25 days, wasn't it? It was on every day, and things sort of have happened. So I can definitely remember that. So it's an interesting sort of take to sort of go back and see what was like sort of 10 years earlier to see what like the conditions were like in this prison. The first episode is called A Human Warehouse. So that kind of sums it up, doesn't it? And that's what the governor has called the place. And the governor is a very, very strange man, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know what's happened to his face. Weird. It's not a normal shape of a face. It's weird.
Well, he talks a good game. I mean, he's explained to the cameras, if I was in this prison, I'd be kicking off. And, you know, it's impossible to run. It's overcrowded. There's too many people here. It's disgusting. Yeah. But then he's saying these things to the camera, but he's, in his actions, he's doing the complete opposite thing to what he's saying. Yeah. He's not helping things at all.
He's not trying to tackle any of those things, is he?
He's almost like institutionalized himself, isn't he? And just sort of going through the days he normally would.
Yeah,
so he's a very strange man, the governor.
To put it like really simply, it's horrendous. It's horrific. It might have been acceptable in the Victorian times, but come 1980, which isn't that long ago. Well, I mean, it is when you think we weren't born at that point, but like, in the grand scheme of the world, it isn't that long ago. And to think that this is how humans were treated and continue to be treated for another 10 years until it all kicked off. It's mad. And, you know, like there's always the debate about people in prison have it easy. And there's always the debate about prisons are overcrowded, how much it costs to put the taxpayers to have people locked up. And people don't want that. And people also don't want people who are in court not being sent to prison. But you can't really have it always. But, I mean, in my opinion, prison is a form of punishment, which is what it is. It's pointless. It's outdated. It doesn't work, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a thing.
Well, I think the punishment, and I think the governor actually says this in one of the episodes. Like I say, he talks a good game, this governor, but he doesn't put anything into practice. And I think he says going to prison is the punishment, the sort of, you know, taking away of your freedom and stuff like that. But you shouldn't be punished then within the prison, which was what was happening. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're being removed from society because, you know, they've committed a crime or in some cases, like, you know, they're dangerous or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then to continue to be punished thereafter, which because of the conditions and slopping out and stuff like that, which is treating them like animals.
Yeah.
I mean, how are they supposed to get better? It's all about reform, isn't it? Once you punish somebody,
surely you send them to prison in the hope
you can't
that
keep doing it.
When they're in prison, they learn about the things that they've done and why they're wrong and how to be a better person and a better member of society when they come out of prison. I suppose the varying levels of sentences are meant to be, well, if you've done this really bad thing, your liberty should be taken away from you for longer. And also the likelihood is you're not going to suddenly turn into a nice person after like 2 months or whatever. You're going to need 10 years or whatever it is. Uh-huh. And it's such a difficult subject because, of course, people who've done bad things should be punished in some way. But I just don't think for the majority of cases of people that end up in court or end up going to prison, like, I don't think it is. It is good. I just don't think it's good. There's got to be a better way.
That's the problem, though. I mean, there's no alternative, I don't think, is there? I mean, you can't really see an alternative. I mean, if somebody does commit a crime, then they need to be punished. And the easiest way to do that is to take that freedom from them, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's why these prisons exist, obviously. I can't really see another way to do it.
No, but, like, really, the only way to maintain you would have to lock every single person up forever, I think, because what's the point when they come back out?
Certainly in this situation, there's no sort of idea of, you know, giving them an education while they're in the prison or anything like that, you know, giving them a different lifestyle or different choices when they go out. If anything, the only thing that they're being educated in the prison is how to be a better crook, a better criminal.
Yeah, I mean, because it's...
They're locked in their cell for 23 hours a day. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's nothing for them. I think if... After the riots and stuff like that in 1990, obviously there was an inquiry in Parliament and things like that, you know, and you know, they made sure that there was these type of programs and stuff like that in prisons to educate and, you know, try and put people on courses and stuff like that, which, you know, in a way, I mean, the rioters did a good thing doing that. It couldn't have gone on, could it?
No, it couldn't.
Do you know what I mean? It couldn't have lasted.
They did do a good thing, like, or they got a good, like, result out of it, I think, in terms of how people should be treated. But like you said, it's a weird one. But if you're looking at the majority of the people that are in this show, at least,
in this prison,
are under, like, uneducated people from like really poor backgrounds, who are in the situation because of the circumstances that they are kind of brought into, and like just where they end up in life. It's chance, isn't it?
They're
born in an area or in areas that is poor, and they mm-hmm. don't have a great education.
For sure, yeah.
And there's not really like, is that it? Like, you're just gonna end up going to jail and having this life in jail. I mean, I'm sure it's just, I don't know. It's very grim. That first episode, the real thing, I mean, it's surprising that the prison, they obviously thought they were in the right. All of these people that are in it must have thought they were in the right. The prison guards and stuff like that. Because watching it now, you're just watching going, how the fuck did they ever think that this was a good idea? Like, they come across as the most, like, arrogant, selfish, inhumane, and, like, brutal bullies. And, like...
Yeah. They're almost making a joke of the whole situation, aren't they? And I think there's a part in the first one where there's a jailer sort of, or a prison guard taking people around and showing them the prison and how it works, and this is the shop, you know, law students, and he's saying, well, you know, every prisoner gets a weekly wage of 90 pence or whatever, whether they're working or not, and depending on your job, you'll get more money and stuff like that. And then he goes on to talk about the food and things like that, and he's just taking the piss. Isn't
he horrible?
He's taking
horrible.
The piss.
He says, they earn 90 pence a week. We know it's too much. And then, like, everything he says when he's explaining it, he's like laughing about it and going, you know, it's the best hotel in Manchester.
Yeah.
It's full every night. And, like, man, it's not, these are law students for a start.
Yeah.
They're not fucking like,
I mean,
kids on a school, you know, like, you've got to try and impress. And if that's the institution that they're going to end up being part of, they're going to end up being in that way of thinking. And it's just like all the way through that tour of he was given these teenagers or whatever. That was it. That was his attitude to all of it. I think he says at one point, like, if they're good, and I don't mean good at thieving, obviously they're not good at thieving because they wouldn't be in here, would they? I mean, if they're good in the conform and come round to our way of society in the prison.
Our way of thinking, yeah.
Our way of thinking, yeah.
Our way of thinking. Uh-huh. But at the same time, I mean, you've got to look at it both ways. I mean, the sort of situation in our prisons, dire. It's absolutely disgusting. And, you know, like I've just mentioned, the frightening thing is that it, you know, could have been my dad, it could have been your dad. If they'd have made a mistake, they could have been sent there. And you're suddenly in this environment where you're having to, you know, three people to a cell that's only, you know, designed for one person. You're shitting in a bucket because there's no, you know, there's no toilet facilities and stuff like that. It's absolutely disgusting. The prisoners are basically trekked by animals, and I'm sure there would have been prison guards there who would have thought, this is not on. Do you know what I mean?
They're going to be the majority of that situation.
You would think so, wouldn't you?
And the minority who are going, this isn't right, are going to be the ones who have to keep quiet or are bullied out of the job.
Exactly.
And something else.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I think that's definitely the case. Because like we've just said, the conditions and stuff, they're awful. I mean, that's the slopping out. I mean, I didn't really know what slopping out was until I watched this and I sort of read a little bit about it. Basically, what slopping out is in the morning when they open the cells, what you've got to do is take your piss and your shit out and you've got to empty it down the drain and stuff like that. I mean, they're no better than animals, these men, are they? They're not treated better than animals.
You know,
it's disgusting.
And you know, like, obviously, some of these people have done bad things, and they're probably not nice people.
Yeah, but some of them, though, it's a local prison, so some of them, I mean, and Thatcher's in government at this particular time. I mean, she's destroyed, you know, working class people's jobs at this particular moment in time. Do you know what I mean? Some people might have just been, you know, nicking to save for the families, or, you know, put food on the table or whatever.
No, I'm not saying that's not the case. I just mean, Like,
some of them are bastards, for sure.
Will they? But it comes down to the thing, like, how you treat people, like, humanely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, look, me and you are probably both, like, on a very small scale, like, anti-establishment, so we're probably thinking these guys are bastards. But we're not, like, and we're also kind of humanitarians or libertarian kind of outlook, like, you know, we've, like, people to be free and treated properly and all of that kind of stuff. Doesn't mean that we don't think that bad people deserve to be just allowed to do what they want to do.
Well, but I'll give an example, right? You know, when Colonel Gaddafi is a cunt, and he's a cunt. But yeah, I think he is. But does he deserve to be kicked and beaten to death and have his balls ripped off? I would say no. That's my opinion. Do you know what I mean? And these people who've nicked sweets or who've nicked a car or, you know, I don't know, stuff like that don't deserve to be treated than less than human, because they are human. And that's the problem with this first episode, where it shows you what the conditions are like in the prison and stuff. It shows you that these people within the prison are not treated as human beings.
Yeah.
And that's deplorable.
And then the second episode kind of takes that element of the first one and plays it out over, like, a particular scenario, doesn't it? So the second one's called The Allegation. And it's all about one kid, Smith, who he's not the brightest lad. He's got issues. And he has accused a prison guard of roughing him up as he put him back in his cell one day. He's got a big kind of shiner on his cheek and a cut. And he's got a cut on his wrist as well, hasn't he? It's a bit weird. And he's made a proper formal allegation against a particular prison guard who we have seen in the first episode being a bit of a dick.
Massive chops.
Yeah, like big chop sideboards. And he's, he takes it properly. So he's being interviewed by, I guess, a solicitor.
I think that guy with the beard, I think he's the assistant governor.
Oh, is he? Okay. Because he seems, and he's a little bit like Bob from The Likely Lads, I think.
he is a little bit. Yeah. I mean, everything's in-house, isn't it? Everything's
done in-house,
so to control everything.
Every aspect of this process of this guy going, I've just been attacked by a prison guard, is investigated, tried, and sentences are handed out by in-house people who obviously all work for the prison. It's mental. And surprisingly,
it's completely insane.
Surprisingly, it doesn't work out well for the lad who makes the accusation.
It doesn't. I mean, this lad called Ian, he's got, you know, it explains that he's been in out of sort of Borstal prison and stuff like that since he was 10. He's got learning problems. He's illiterate. But he conducts himself, I think, pretty well, Ian. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the pressure that's being slowly ramped up on him all the way through, because nobody's going to listen to him. Nobody's going to, you know, take into what he says in any account. They're going to screw him, basically. He hasn't got a leg to stand on, has he? He doesn't know what he's getting himself in for.
No, he's basically, he's putting himself... What would the phrase be? Putting his head above the parapet. He's like, but he doesn't, I don't think he realizes what the outcome might be for him or what's going to happen. And which is why I don't think he would have made that claim if it wasn't real. What would be in it?
Exactly.
What would be in it for him to make that claim if it wasn't real? Like, it's not worth it, is it?
It's not worth it. I mean, I personally believe what Ian's saying, when you look at the conduct of, like, the prison officers, how they're backing each other up, and suddenly a witness, another prison guard, will go, oh, yeah, I saw what happened. I didn't hear it, though.
Like,
Ian's got a witness, hasn't he? Ian's got a witness who he sort of says...
This is where I think the assistant governor was doing the questioning is pretty good, because he's saying, like, basically he's given a full statement about, yeah, I saw it, I heard it, I didn't see it, I heard it, I heard what this guy said, I heard what he said. He's got a distinctive voice, so I knew it was him, and I heard the words he said, and all of this stuff. And then... next time you see him, he's going, yeah, sorry. And he's being stared down by a massive prison guard while he tells...
By two, isn't he?
By two of them. The assistant governor's going, have you decided to do this of your own accord? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, but why did you decide to change your mind? He's like, he just says, I just don't want to get involved. And like, there's only, you would only do that if if somebody had said to you, if you go ahead with this,
you're terrified,
it's going to be bad news for you. That's the only way you would change your story. Not to actually, I realize now, maybe what I heard isn't that reliable. He literally says, I have realized I want to stay out of it.
Yeah, that's all he says he does. But the assistant sort of governor who's dealing with this complaint once he makes it is. He's in the system as well, isn't he? He knows that there's nothing going to come of this, and he's going to get out of it. The prison guard's going to get out of it in some way, because when he sits down with Ian, he says to him, "So you've made this complaint, and you're making it official. You sure you're going to make it official?" And Ian says, "Yes." Well, the prison guard hit us, you know, and it was unprovoked. And he goes, "Well, you're not under suspicion at the moment."
I know. I thought that was weird.
How's he under suspicion?
It's the first interview he does with them. And that's what he says.
He's like, one making the complaint.
He says, yeah, you're not on trial right now. There's no allegations. Like, you know, he's
right.
Come to you. Why would he be under suspicion?
Immediately, the first words out of his mouth are, "You're not on trial at the moment, but you're going to be." You know what I mean? Because that's how this works.
He's also the best one in it. He's the best, most human, and seems to try the best to get to the real story about it. His hands are tied, obviously, and like you say, bits of the institutionalized like behavior comes out in moments like that. But he's also by far the only person that seems interested in actually working out what did happen.
I think that's true. I think he does, but that being cynical about it, that is his job. It's his job to investigate once a sort of complaint's been made. And he does sort of investigate it, but yeah, he knows how it's going to turn out. This Ian lad's got, he hasn't got a leg to stand on. And it's painful, isn't it, to watch?
That went well for Ian, I thought, was to give him a haircut, which was well overdue. I don't know how he ended up with that long hair.
It was. They did. They were even managing to take the piss out of him while they were cutting his hair.
I know. It's ridiculous.
It's constant abuse, isn't it? And what we should say as well is that this whole thing, this whole issue, the thing that Ian's done wrong is he takes too much bread. Takes too much bread.
Ian gives his interview to the assistant governor, and he says, "Yeah, he hit us and whatever." Like, makes the allegation. I wasn't doing anything wrong. It was unprovoked. He said, "I clenched my fist because he came at us, but I didn't punch him." And he said something to us, and threw me knife at the wall, and I said, "Well, I'll kill myself rather than go through this again," or something. And the prison guard shut the door behind him and kept coming up to it and shouting, "Have you done it yet?" through the spy hole.
I know. Fucking hell. This is a guy with mental health problems who's on, like, suicide watch and stuff.
Also, why would you make that?
He's trying to commit suicide, which you wouldn't make the allegation, would you?
You wouldn't make that mad thing about him kept coming back to the door and saying... Oh,
you wouldn't make it up.
Yeah, you wouldn't say that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That's a very specific thing to make up. Also, we should say the treatment for inmates that trying to commit suicide is probably the worst reaction to that I've ever think anybody could ever come up with.
Do you want to explain what that is?
There's a bit, what the governor says to him and stuff like that.
But it's disgraceful.
So they say sometimes you don't realise that some of the people in here have got mental problems until they try and kill themselves or whatever. Mm. You're like, okay, surely there must be some way to find out before it gets to the point of somebody killing themselves that they might have mental health problems or there's some kind of issues. But anyway, they went, what we do is anybody who tries to kill themselves, we put them in this solo padded cell, get them to strip naked, and just give them a bucket to have a shit in. And then leave them in there until they don't want to kill themselves anymore.
Leave them in there. And then the governor turns up, opens the door, and this fella hasn't shit in the bucket. He's a dirty protest or whatever.
Yeah.
And he walks in, he goes, "You're being a very silly boy, aren't you?"
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
The other thing about this documentary, I mean, it's really well done because it's just not that the sort of the way that the narrator sort of does things is it's all understated and it's just showing you exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's no need to sort of dramatize it
there's
or anything
no
like that because it is what it is.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It lets the people in the prison, whether it's the prisoners or the prison guards, say whatever they want to say. That might make them look good, it might make them look bad, it might show the prisoners up to be lunatics and angry, violent criminals, and it might make the prison guards do the same. Like, so the prison guard for Ian Smithy says, it says, when he's having his interview with the assistant governor, says, you know, he's well known for, I had a look on his plate and he had 5 slices of bread and 4 crusts. He's well known for it. And the issue isn't that he's taking the extra bread. It's that when it comes to slopping out, he's not even eating it.
Yeah.
He's throwing it away. And I've warned him about it before and I warned him about it now. So all of this is because he's had some extra crust of bread that he might may or may not eat.
Extra bread?
Even if that's true. He's so serious about it that he's saying it like as if he's like, it's the severity of as if he stabbed his cellmate or something.
Yeah, it's so menial and insignificant that these certain sort of prison guards in there, the power's just completely gone to the head and they think they can just treat the prisoners any way they see fit, really, don't they? That's the thing.
It's crazy.
So, poor Ian, bless him. And like I said, I think he conducted himself really well under massive pressure. I mean, he's talking about this implement that they found in his cell and stuff. Well, can't you send it for blood? Because this is my blood type and stuff.
Yeah.
And they just completely dismiss what he said, as if he hadn't said it. It's almost as if he's just talking to brick walls. Yeah. It doesn't matter what he says, does it?
Ian now has to go on trial for making a malicious accusation against the prison guard. So the result of him saying this guy punched in the face is we don't believe you. So instead, we're going to put you on trial.
You're on trial.
For making an accusation that was untrue, maliciously. This trial is the least fair thing I've ever seen. I can't believe that this is allowed to go on.
It's unbelievable.
This is the one bit, I think, where the narrator kind of does say, but he doesn't like embellish it like you say, but he lays out what the system is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's he can't have a lawyer. He has to conduct his own case and he has to question the prison guards as the witnesses.
Yeah.
And there's 2 old ladies and a prison board member or something like that, who then decide whether they think he's told the truth or the prison guards have told the truth. And if they find it's malicious, they can basically remove any chance of them having parole up to half a year.
Yeah,
or something, isn't it?
Like early release, isn't it? Yeah. They've got this hold over all the prisoners, the prison guards haven't. Is it called remission? Where they can, if they, you know, for good behavior or whatever, they'll get out early and they've got this hold over all of them. And that's the thing that they take away from him, isn't it? Yeah. They take away sort of privileges, work privileges and stuff like that. Yeah. And sort of any chance of him getting out early.
And it's this real passive aggressive like relationship between the prison guards and the prisoners, where they keep being like, do you not want to get out early? Do you not think that you would want to get out there? And you keep being a bad boy, and we're gonna, it means you won't be able to have your breakfast and all that kind of stuff. It's like, what the fuck?
I know. You better not keep looking out that window, son, because you're not getting out there, are you?
Yeah, he's going, I'm not bothered. I'll just stay in here.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't know, would you?
He's going, well, you keep looking out the window. He's like, yeah, I'm not bothered. Well, you'll never get out there with that attitude. He's like, well, I don't want to. He's like, well, stop looking out the window then.
I mean, what it reminded me of was like the Shawshank Redemption, Stephen King's story, and it reminded me of that a lot. I mean, what the prison, once you're in the prison, they've took your freedom away. And then after that, they take your hope away, don't they? And that's what the prison guards have got over all the prisoners. They're taking the hope away from them. And they do it sort of with joy, and, you know, they do it readily, and it's disgraceful.
Yeah.
It's awful. To be honest, it's something that you need to watch, I think, isn't it? To see how bad it actually is.
We'll tweet them out. There's four episodes on there, and I can see from the comments going, fucking hell, I'm glad somebody put these back up here, because like, I've been wanting to see them for years, and the comments under the YouTube videos are like, they're also like quite insightful. So yeah, the four episodes are on YouTube. I'm going to watch the other ones, because I mean, it's fascinating. I'm sure there was six, maybe I'm wrong, but it's fascinating and awful, and a massive insight into what society was like back then, and obviously continue to be like for at least 10 years in terms of this. So yeah, you should watch it. Strange Ways, 1980. It's on YouTube. We'll tweet the links out, and you can make your own mind up, but don't sit down on a date night to watch it or with the kids or anything like that, because it's pretty grim watching. Should we lighten the mood with a fun quiz about prisons?
Yes, let's do that. But you've already answered some of them as we've gone through, but we'll give it a go anyway. So yeah, we've got a Strange Ways quiz here. The first one, Cliff, can you name these three celebrity inmates who are at Strange Ways? First one, footballer jailed for assault.
I know we've talked about fan
of cigars.
Oh, Joey Barton.
Joey Barton, yes, indeed. He was the first one. Second one, singer jailed for air rage.
Ian Brown,
yes. He wrote three songs about being in prison, didn't he?
Jingle jangle.
That's right. Here's the jailer. All that stuff, aye. Next one, maybe surprising, I don't know. TV presenter specialising in antiques, jailed for fraud.
Oh, David Dickinson.
David Dickinson, yes. He was an inmate of Strange Ways. You'll definitely get this one. And if you don't, one of our Twitter followers will have a go at you. Which band released the album Strange Ways, Here We Come in 1987?
Well, Davey will be pleased to know that I know that's the Smiths. And that's one song album that I like as much as any Smiths album. I love the production on that. And Johnny Marr kind of takes over on that one. I love it.
Does he?
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Definitely a good thing. I think so anyway. Next one. In the song, a bit harder this one actually, Clip. In the song, There Goes a Tenor from the album The Dreamin', who sings about being a star in Strange Ways? It's a female singer.
It's Kate Bush, isn't it?
Yes, it is Kate Bush. Well done. Didn't know you'd get that one. Ha. I do know that you'll get the next one.
Okay.
What date did the Strange Way riots happen in 1990?
Yes, it was my 9th birthday, April the 1st.
It was indeed. Last one. Which Snap song did the prisoners blast from speakers while they were on the roof of that 1990 riot?
Rhythm is a Dancer.
That's a good one. No, it's not that one. It was The Power that was out at the same time.
Okay.
And it was rather apt to them being on the
roof. Yeah.
So, yes, That's the quiz.
I did well on
that's
that one.
That's the strange ways. You did well on that one. You did really well on that one. Completely. So we've got music this week, have we?
Yeah, it's good. Really, really like it.
It's a bit different, this one, isn't it?
It is. It's
a bit different to the normal stuff that we'll play.
It is, but I think it's a bit apt for this one as well.
But yeah, this one was it was sort of sent over to us by a lad that listens to our podcast and sort of talks to us a bit on Twitter and stuff, yep. Like called Felix.
Yeah.
And he sent it over and then I contacted the band and stuff like that and got them on. So if there's anybody else out there who follows Word and wants to send a band to Word and stuff,
we'll
be happy to have it, won't we?
So yeah, I thought this was great. I have a listen to it and actually listen to it. Thank you to Four Marks. This is Paradise. We have been Brett and Cliff. You can follow us on Twitter at FCircusPod. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. And like us, rate us, subscribe, and all of that kind of stuff. Goodbye, Brett.
Be a slave to us. Be a slave to us.
Slave to the rhythm.
Say goodnight.
Like in dignity in fair Verona, where we lay our scene. From ancient grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean.
Let's take our Montague, we'll call him X. He grew up poor, uneducated and vexed. He left home at 16 years old to carry out a legacy he'd always been told. His granddad Jack has served many a tour, stories of triumph and battles and wars. He seeks solace in the bossing roles, taking on adventures in lands unknown. Let's take our Capulet, we'll call him Y. Grew up from privilege and sporting life, from a long line of prominent government types who'd all been helped out by the old school tie. Best education that money could buy, wanted for nothing, he was next in line. Oxbridge, full of civil service in sight, climbing the ladders he'd been left to climb. Why was young and full of ideals? Chomsky is Bible left leaning ideas. So what was his oyster, uninhibited by fears? So what was his playground to bring on the years? Forward march to the tune of his band, his own adventures to the promised land. No need for armies, it's a one man stand. The world awaits in the palm of his hands.
Seen two tours, it started out fine but didn't feel like a war. It felt like it was all just a politician's job. They send the boys over whilst they go on the rob. But there was one day that would change his life, driving a Challenger 2 with his buddy at his side. Suddenly shots fired in, coming from the right. It's too late to drop, roll and hide. The vehicle turns and he loses control. As the wheels slip, they might not make it home. Trying to get out so they can run and flee. That's when I heard the bang of the IED. X's buddy was laid out dead. X was dropping out, broken mind and head. 2 months passed and X was discharged with a couple of the world is being run down.